Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, November 13th, 2020. COVID, the local response. Rolling on, Decatur buses continue to provide essential service through pandemic. Virginia Reed has spent 25 years as a bus driver for the Decatur Public Transit System, and during that time she has never experienced anything like the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. While steps have been taken to protect the drivers who have been deemed essential employees since the coronavirus became more prevalent in March, it's proven a little more challenging when it comes to the passengers. Maintaining social distancing is nearly impossible, especially as more people take advantage of the service, and drivers say there are some passengers who want to push the limits when it comes to following the mask rule. We have our social distancing, but not in the back, Reed said, referring to the area of the buses where passengers travel. You have so many people, you just can't turn them down. It's too cold out there. According to the City of Decatur administration, steps have been taken to practice every precaution for the safety of everyone on Decatur buses. Those steps include deploying more buses, regular sanitation of the vehicles, and limiting contact between the drivers and the passengers. From the beginning, we have worked to make sure our buses were as safe as possible, said Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, both for the drivers and the passengers. Although the COVID-19 pandemic halted many activities, city buses were still needed, or no one could get to health care or their jobs, Moore Wolf said. The people who most used the buses really needed that transportation. Since April, the city has suspended bus fares. That measure is done to protect the drivers, said John Kindseth, deputy city manager. We encourage people to go through the back of the bus, stay away from the driver so they don't pass anything unknowingly to the bus driver. It also allowed those who used the service to have to save some cash. That is a huge benefit for the people that need the additional financial assistance, Kindseth said. But bus driver Anthony Nelson is concerned about the number of people riding the buses any given time. We're running more people than what we should be doing, he said. There is never enough social distancing with 6 feet on the bus. Nelson said the passengers sit on the bus close to one another because of the lack of room. Nelson has also dealt with many passengers who want to argue about the social distancing recommendation and mask mandate. Some of them don't believe in the whole situation, whether the coronavirus is even truly real, he said. I know it is. I tell them, even if you don't believe, that's one thing, but you've got to have your mask on in order to ride the bus. The drivers try to enforce the mask guideline, he said, but not everybody is wearing it. The city has recommendations and guidelines like all buses. At the end of the day, people have to take responsibility for themselves, Kindseth said. Kindseth said steps have been taken to reduce the number of passengers on buses at one time. The city has required bus routes to run continuously during the day with two buses per route, so people can get on the first bus or get on the second bus to cut the passengers in half, he said. As for other safety precautions, Kindseth said, the buses are cleaned throughout the day by the drivers, who wipe down commonly touched areas such as seats and railings with disinfecting sprays and wipes. The vehicles get extra attention in the evening. We use a chemical fogging machine that kills all viruses and bacteria, Kindseth said. It takes a couple of hours for that process to work. The buses are also allowed to air out overnight, so you don't smell that disinfectant the next morning, Kindseth said. Because the process can be expensive, the city was able to purchase its own disinfecting machine. The chemicals are made locally and used on other vehicles, including ambulances, police cars, and fire equipment, Kindseth said. That has significantly cut the cost of these chemicals, he said. The city has been providing masks to the drivers and the passengers who don't have their own. According to Kindseth, the city was early to adopt a free mask policy for anyone who gets on a bus. Not only are we requiring a mask, but we are providing them a mask, he said. At a time when masks were difficult to find, the city was able to use its resources to supply them, so they can't use an excuse that you don't have one, Kindseth said. Drivers for the paratransport buses are supplied tie-back or coverall suits for extra protection. The passengers are the ones who have mobility issues, Kindseth said. The drivers often come in close contact with their passengers. A lot of times it involves somebody with a wheelchair or that needs help getting onto the vehicle, Kindseth said. But the drivers aren't immune to the growing prevalence of COVID-19 in the community. In September, the city announced the first bus driver testing positive for the virus. Since then, others have tested positive as well. Mandated isolation because of infection or having extended contact with someone who has tested positive has put a strain on staffing levels. We have a lot of drivers out right now between having it and being tested, Nelson said. Things are really strained right now. According to Kindseth, the city has offered to hire temporary bus drivers to replace the sick or quarantined ones. The challenge has been that the drivers have been opposed to bringing in people from outside of Decatur to help supplement the drivers, he said. I don't have enough drivers here locally that have stepped up for the cause. The city has approved the purchase of doors for added bus driver protection. Fixed route buses will have a door barrier. It essentially builds a cage, a protective barrier around the bus driver, so that we can eventually re-implement the fare collection. Or at least have people ride more to the front of the bus, not come in contact with the driver. Along with virus protection, the barrier will have other benefits, including added safeguard from unruly passengers. The city recommends passengers continue to do their part to protect themselves, wearing masks, face shields, using hand sanitizers, as well as minimizing touching surfaces and respecting social distancing are the common suggestions. Make responsible decisions, Kindseth said, whether you're using public transportation or going to the grocery store. You treat them all the same. You have to assume you are a positive case. The guidelines are meant to protect the entire public. All of the guidelines are beneficial not only for your fellow passengers, but also for the drivers, he said. And say thank you. The city reminds the public the bus drivers are considered frontline workers. Their job is at a slightly higher risk, Kindseth said, and they're making sure that you get to wherever you need to be on a daily basis. Show them the respect they deserve. COVID state surge. Pritzker, numbers don't lie. Illinoisans urged to stay home. Macon County sees additional death. Springfield. Illinois residents are being urged to stay at home as much as possible for at least the next 3 weeks as the second wave of COVID-19 outbreaks continues to sweep across the state. The latest advisory from the Illinois Department of Public Health does not represent a renewal of the stay-at-home order that was in effect this spring. But Governor J.B. Pritzker warned Thursday that if current trends continue, stricter mitigation orders could be in store. With many community leaders choosing not to listen to the doctors, we are left with not many tools left in our toolbox to fight this, Pritzker said during his daily COVID-19 briefing in Chicago. The numbers don't lie. If things don't take a turn in the coming days, we will quickly reach the point when some form of mandatory stay-at-home order is all that will be left. Pritzker's warning came as Macon County health officials announced a man in his 80s with COVID-19 became the 82nd resident to die of the disease. It also was announced Thursday that 41 more residents have tested positive for COVID-19, bringing the total since the pandemic began to 4,834 cases. Of those, 3,176 have been released from isolation, 1,545 remain in home isolation, and 31 are hospitalized. The latest guidelines urge all Eleanor residents to stay at home as much as possible, leaving home only for work or school if they are not working or learning remotely, for grocery shopping, visiting a doctor, or getting a COVID-19 test. He also said the state is increasing its testing capacity at the most visited testing sites in the state, Aurora, Arlington Heights, and Harwood Heights. A full list of available testing sites statewide can be found at the Illinois Department of Public Health's website. That's dph.illinois.gov/testing. Again, dph.illinois.gov/testing. Earlier Thursday, Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot issued a 30-day stay-at-home advisory for residents of that city, where the rolling 7-day average test positivity hit 13.9% on Monday, November 9th. Both Chicago's and the state's advisories extend through the upcoming Thanksgiving Day weekend, and public health officials strongly urged people to avoid any type of gathering outside of their own households. With the rising prevalence of the virus, attending even the smallest gathering that mixes households or traveling to surrounding areas, that increases the risk of further spread of this virus, IDPH Director Dr. Ngozi Nzike said during the briefing. Again, our goal is to reduce transmission. It's always been our goal, but especially as we head into the holidays, so that businesses, so that schools, so that our veterans' homes can be safe, she said. Zike spoke of recent outbreaks that have occurred at a number of state-run veterans' homes, including one in LaSalle, where more than 150 cases of COVID-19 and 9 virus-related deaths have been confirmed among residents and staff. The new stay-at-home advisory came as the state recorded a new record for the number of people hospitalized with the disease. As of late Wednesday night, 5,258 people were reported hospitalized, an increase of more than 200 from the day before. That included 956 people in intensive care units and 438 patients on ventilators. Over the previous 24 hours, IDPH reported 12,702 newly confirmed or probable cases of the disease out of 100,617 tests performed, for a single-day positivity rate of 12.6%. The preliminary 7-day rolling average case positivity rate was reported at 12.6%. Meanwhile, Pritzker also used some of the strongest language yet in talking about local elected officials who have so far refused to enforce the state's mitigation orders aimed at controlling the spread of the virus. To the elected officials who have chosen to disregard public health guidance, those who have stood up at press conferences to question the data and fuel conspiracy theories, those who have taken their absurd crusade to the courts and lost nearly every single time, those who have flat out told the businesses in their communities to ignore what their local and state public health departments and experts, some of the best in the nation, are telling them, what is it going to take to get you to be part of the solution, Pritzker said. There may be a vaccine on the way in just a few months, but a lot of lives can be saved before that happens, he added. And when this is all over, there will be an accounting by your constituents of who worked to keep the public safe and who just ignored the science, he said. Illini football. Illinois quiet on quarterback. Peters still out, but Williams back in the mix. Champagne. Don't expect Lovie Smith to tip his hand about who starts at quarterback on Saturday against Rutgers. In his fifth season as the head coach of the Illinois football team, this should hardly be a surprise. Smith keeps as many matters in-house as he possibly can. Injuries and starting spots certainly fit the keep-in-house bill. Here's what we know. Starter Brandon Peters will miss the game per Big Ten protocols following a positive test for COVID-19 on October 29th. He'll be eligible to return next week against Nebraska, but can be around the team now. Backup Isaiah Williams was able to join practice on Wednesday after he was caught up in a contact tracing when roommate Griffin Moore tested positive for COVID-19 on October 29th. Matt Robinson, also listed as backup, was injured on the first drive of an October 31st game against Purdue. Fourth stringer Corin Taylor finished that game and started last week with a loss to Minnesota. In other words, mum is the word. I have an idea, Smith said on Monday, without disclosing who the starter will be. When I say it's pretty clear, I have an idea. I have an idea of who will start at every position. You still go through practice, and you do find things out from going through there. We just didn't start practicing yesterday. It may seem that way from the way we played this weekend, but we've been practicing for a while. We've had a chance to see all our players, so we can have an idea who they are. Once you have an entire group together, yeah, we have an idea how it's going to play out, he said. Taylor struggled in his first career start against the Gophers, going 6 of 17 passing for 106 yards and a touchdown. But 73 of those came on 2 fourth quarter passes. He's gotten praise for his leadership ability, particularly stepping into a tough role in an October 31st loss to Purdue. Corin Taylor has embraced the starting quarterback role, Illinois defensive lineman Alex Pelzewski said on Monday. He's become a lot more vocal. He understands he's one of the leaders on our offense right now. I'm just really proud of how he stepped up in his role and executed, he said. Williams, a redshirt freshman who was highly recruited out of Trinity Catholic High School in St. Louis, has been able to join in on Zoom meetings during his 2-week contact tracing quarantine. Players who were out for contact tracing had access to the Smith Center during the quarantine, but worked out after the rest of the team did. The Illini had packages for him in the season-opening loss against Wisconsin, and Rod Smith praised Williams' growth in training camp. We're going to let those guys take reps, offensive coordinator Rod Smith said. Obviously, we'll get guys back, which will be a good thing, have a little bit more competition. We'll let it play out. All those guys have been fairly close anyway throughout the season, throughout camp and whatnot. We'll let them take some reps, and we'll see who can separate themselves throughout the course of the week and go from there, he said. Could Illinois play 2 quarterbacks against Rutgers, similar to the plan against Wisconsin? Sure. Rod Smith always prepares at least 3 quarterbacks, starters and backups each get 4 reps in practice, and third stringers get 2. Fourth stringers get very little, if any, which made Taylor's performance against Purdue that much more impressive. I never go in saying, we have to use this many, Rod Smith said. I've always said, Isaiah, there's a place for him, and you want to have him touch the ball somehow, whether he's playing quarterback, whether he's playing with a wide out. You could see 2. I hope you don't see 3. If you see 3, it means we have an injury or we're not playing as well as we should. On Tuesday, Smith doubled down on not naming a starter. Alas, the waiting game begins. Each day kind of tells us something, Smith said. The more options you have, the better off we'll be. Need a hug? Question leads to punch in face, Decatur police say. Police said a Decatur man being cussed at by stepbrother asked him, "Bro, do you need a hug?" Whereupon his brother punched him in the face hard enough to leave him with a nosebleed. A sworn Macon County Sheriff's Office affidavit said the trouble flared Monday afternoon when the 58-year-old alleged assailant, who lives in Dalton City, was returning a television to the victim, age 51, in the 1400 block of Linder Avenue. Deputy Anthony Anello said an argument flared between the two men, witnessed by a woman who said the assailant warned the other man to get his expletive out of his truck or he's going to throw it out, according to Anello. This prompted the younger man to make the hug offer, and cursing, the older stepbrother walked up and hit him in the face, knocking his glasses off and leaving him with a bloody nose. Anello said that the older brother told police they had argued over who was going to unload the television from his vehicle, but he denied hitting the other man. Anello said deputies examined the victim, who still had dried blood present in his nostrils. The older stepbrother was booked on a preliminary charge of domestic battery. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. Macon County jail records show he's now free after posting $300 bond on bail set at $3,000. He's been ordered to stay away from his stepbrother. In more local and state news on page A3, As Pritzker talks cuts, EIU touts success in tough times. In Governor J.B. Pritzker's first remarks after voters rejected his administration's signature proposal for graduated rate income tax in Illinois, the first-term Democrat signaled out higher education as one of the many state-supported areas that could lose funding as lawmakers try to balance the next budget. With no new sources of revenue and an expected drop in gains from sales tax during the coronavirus pandemic, Pritzker warned that he is left with few favorable options: reducing discretionary funding for the state's 12 public universities and community colleges could make it harder for students to afford college if schools raise tuition to offset the losses, some experts said. And there could be less money to support grant programs for low-income college students who qualify for state assistance in a time when many applicants are expected to seek aid. Eastern Illinois University officials responded to the governor's statement by saying the university has proven itself to be a good investment. Despite years of state divestment in higher education, EIU has maintained our position as Illinois' lowest cost of attendance public university, a statement released by Eastern said. In the statement, university officials noted enrollment increases during the last 4 years that came at the same time as stringent cost control measures. It also said Pritzker and the state legislature should be aware of the return on investment higher education provides and the disproportionate impact the earlier budget impasse had. "We're all in this together," said, "and EIU will do everything we can to assist our leaders in their effort to move Illinois forward," the statement said. The possible reduction in student aid prompted concerns from officials at Illinois State University. More than 5,000 ISU students receive state funds through the Monetary Award Program, which is based on financial need and the Aim High Aspirational Institutional Match Helping Illinois Grow Higher Education grant program, which is designed to encourage Illinois high school graduates to stay in Illinois for their further education. While Illinois universities are not expecting any budget changes for this fiscal year, which began July 1st, some advocates and policy experts said the long-term implications for Illinois higher education could be severe if new sources of funding aren't found. "Without new revenue, our fear is that we will continue to see the same trajectory that the state has been on in terms of lower enrollment, especially for Black students," said Kyle Westbrook, executive director of the Partnership for College Completion, a Chicago-based nonprofit. Over the past two decades, Westbrook said, state appropriations for public universities have remained relatively flat, but haven't kept pace with inflation, and a greater share of the funding is being directed to pensions for public university and community college employees. On top of that, some schools are still reeling from the state's two-year budget impasse under former Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, Westbrook said. Universities that rely more heavily on state dollars and serve a higher number of lower-income students were disproportionately affected by the funding delays. You could argue the situation was dire even before the budget impasse, but that created a crisis in the system as a whole, said Westbrook, who led education policy in former Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel's administration. The failure of the tax amendment to pass is so catastrophic for higher ed in the state. Adam Schuster, senior director of budget and tax research at the right-leaning Illinois Policy Institute, agreed that inflation-adjusted spending on higher education is significantly down. Funding has dropped by nearly 20% since 2010. When accounting for inflation while spending on pensions has skyrocketed, he said. But Schuster called for reform to the state pension system, a politically divisive issue, as opposed to changing Illinois' flat income tax rate of 4.95%. Estimated progressive income tax revenues were not earmarked for any particular purpose and would have failed to close the state's structural deficit, he said in an emailed statement. Cuts to state spending on higher education stem from the unsustainable growth in contributions to the state pension systems. And the photo that accompanies this article shows freshman Mia Smith works on a blanket during this semester's move-in day at Eastern Illinois University on August 20th. Governor J.B. Pritzker said higher education could be facing budget cuts after voters rejected the graduated income tax plan and state revenues are hurting because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And it's a sunny day on August 20th. And there are the student in the foreground is sitting on a blanket with her mask on, and at least 6 feet away behind her are more students sitting on looks like a tarp or a blanket, and then in the background more students socially distanced sitting on blue tarps. On the Week in Illinois page, there's a photograph honoring veterans in Chicago. An Army Color Guard presents colors during a ceremony Wednesday by the Wolves and the Arlington Heights-based 85th Support Command to honor veterans at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial on the Chicago River Walk in the Loop. And it shows several soldiers honor guard uniforms with masks and carrying their weapons, and one with an American flag and one with a state of Illinois flag, and there is a large wreath on a stand that say Chicago Wolves and the 85th Support Command, honoring veterans on Wednesday, November 11th, Veterans Day. And that's all we have time for in the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, the 13th of November, 2020. We'll take a short break. Please stay tuned. This is Barbara Ridenour.